You're welcome, listeners, for that little lesson in male geography.
To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people.
Because history has shown us that courage can be contagious, and hope can take on a life of its own.
I will bring you hope, old friend. And I ask only one thing in return.
We move now, together.
Not at all. Hope is not lost today. It is found.
Hope is what keeps you going.
Even if the whole world is telling you to move, it is your duty to plant yourself like a tree, look them in the eye and say no. You move.
Welcome to Skiffy and Fancy Torture Cinema.
What is it with our listeners making us watch bad Wesley Snipes movies where he fights undead?
Those bastards!
Again! And he's undead! Again!
Again! I'm Jen.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Paul.
And today on Torture Cinema, we are going to watch the 2004 follow-up to the 2002, probably follow-up to the 2000 actual good movie, which is Blade Trinity.
Does it count if it killed me?
Does it count if what killed you?
The movie.
You're still alive.
Am I?
Well, you could be a vampire at this point.
You never know.
I have no way to confirm nor deny that fact.
Yes, but that's not a fatal condition as we found out in the movie. Which I have questions about later.
Science!
Bad science. Science with italics.
And all kinds of quotation marks. So, first we have to talk about what we're drinking, but we're all a bunch of straight-edge hardcorers tonight, so that'll be really exciting for you, I'm sure. Let's start with Becca. Becca, what are you drinking this evening?
Twinings English breakfast tea. Yeah.
I haven't had Twinings English breakfast in years.
It's yummy.
I'm too poor for Twinings.
In all honesty, my roommate bought this for me. I'm a grad student. I have no money.
Exactly. I buy like that 89 cents box of 100 bags of tea.
It's
marvelous.
Your poor taste buds, no.
Oh, Jen.
My parents buy my tea for me.
All right, Paul, what are you drinking this lovely evening?
Since I live here in the Midwest, of course, I'm going to drink a local root beer brew, and once again, it is Sprecher root beer from over the border in Wisconsin. Probably my favorite root beer currently.
Paul, I'm pretty sure that it's been your favorite root beer since we started doing Torture Cinema.
No. I flirted with some other ones like Goose Island and Iron Horse.
That's true.
That makes it sound like you had a love affair with root beer.
And okay, I can't get it cheaply, but Abita root beer is better than Sprecher, but I can't get Abita cheaply. So
cheapness is a factor.
Abita. How do you spell Abita, Paul?
A-B-I-T-A. It's actually from Louisiana. The weirdest place I can get it, I found this out a couple weeks ago when I went to the Mega Mall, is they have it on tap at Shake Shack.
They have it on tap at Shake Shack?
I was a little stunned too. Here I am at Shake Shack, and I was like, I look at the menu, and they say root beer, and I look over. Oh, they have bottles. They don't see any bottles. I look over, and there's a tap. And it says Abita. I was like, oh my god, I have to have Abita root beer because they have it on tap.
That's impressive.
I was quite impressed. And it is slightly better than Sprecher, but since I can't get it that often, Sprecher is my go-to root beer.
I mean, root beer is the best, so.
I mean, once upon a time, it used to be Barks, but then now I've evolved and changed it. It's pretty firmly Sprecher, unless I get a case of Goose Island and get sucked into that, or Iron Horse or whatnot, but. So what are you drinking, Jen?
You know how you were just making fun of me for drinking 89-cent tea that comes in a 100-pack?
I wasn't making fun of you. I was feeling bad for you. I wasn't making fun of you. There's a difference.
Are you drinking 89-cent tea that comes in a 100-pack, Jen?
Well, technically, I think if you divide 89 cents by 100, that makes it 0.089.
You're getting tea for Christmas.
I am drinking the green tea variety, and it's actually quite refreshing. Don't laugh at me.
I'm not laughing. I'm just judging.
What kind of teas do you prefer, Jen?
I really enjoy basically any tea that is not sweet. So I don't like chocolate flavors. I don't like vanilla flavors. I like floral and citrus.
How do you feel about chai?
I don't really drink much chai.
I quite enjoy chai.
Yes. So this is actually our Christmas torture cinema in which we all put it out there what we want for Christmas. So
I would like a new car, please.
Paul likes Abita root beer. I like tea from Desert Sage, which is my favorite tea company. And Becca wants a new car.
Yes, please.
One of these things do not matter to the others.
In the event that you are unable to afford me buying me a new car, I will take Starbucks gift cards.
That's an excellent option, despite your lack of taste in decent coffee.
It's the closest shop on campus.
Oh, I'm sorry. But none of that has anything to do with Blade Trinity whatsoever.
Clever us, that.
You know, trying to avoid the whole subject.
We are trying to avoid the entire subject, which in the final product of these episodes, most of you don't realize that I have cut out the 10 minutes of time that we are trying to avoid the subject of the movie.
So who gets to tell the plot?
1, 2, 3, not it.
Not it.
I guess that's me then. Okay, I will try to explain the plot of Blade Trinity. God help my neurons.
I would honestly have to open the wiki page in order to tell you.
Okay, so our movie opens in, of all places, the Syrian desert, where helicopters are flying towards a mysterious tomb that looks nothing like any sort of tomb I've ever seen in Mesopotamia or just about anywhere else. The persons on the helicopters turn out to be vampires because one sticks up his finger at the sun and they are all super strong, and a couple of them get eaten by whatever they find inside of the tomb. Mysterious. Marco Pozzi apparently is leading this group. This will become relevant later. Cut to the night where our hero Blade is being heroic by firebombing a warehouse full of vampires and their familiars, which are basically the World of Darkness version ghouls, or just, you know, vampire wannabes, as he says. He stalks, he kills vampires, and killing a would-be vampire, he finds out that, much as a surprise, it's a trap, and he's actually killed a real human. And so said human gets staked, and Blade is live on candid camera across the world as being a murderer, because when you kill vampires, there's no bodies left behind, but when you kill a human, well, bad things happen. Blade has his best friend, Chris Christopherson, who drives semi-trucks and helps him with his work, although they seem to have a very acidly bromance, and Chris Christopherson rightly tells Blade that we are going to be in trouble because now we're going to have the cops coming on us. Blade thinks this is not really an issue. In the meantime, Parker Posey and her group have indeed gotten the vampire out of Syria and to their little lair, and it turns out this vampire is actually the first vampire, sometimes known as Drake, but better known as Dracula. Parker Posey and Dracula have a plan, and it involves Blade. Cutting back to our regular sketch one, we have a weird interlude with a TV talk show where they talk about vampires. I'm not sure we really needed that. And then we skip that boring bit, and then we get Blade to get his little operation taken over by the police, who decide to destroy everything all and sundry. Chris Christopherson blows up all the computers in a wasteful use of materials I couldn't quite understand, and Blade himself is eventually captured. Fortunately for Blade, when he's Bart to the Detroit Plaza. Two groups actually try to free him. One is Parker Posey and her little merry gang of vampires, which includes Triple H randomly among other people. And, of course, there's a group of vampire hunters led by Deadpool 0.5 and a baby wrestler, a.k.a. Jessica Biel.
A.k.a. Katniss 0.5.
Huh, yes.
Oh, a.k.a. Katniss 0.5, yes. Because she does like to do the bow action.
The bow action?
Bow action goodness.
Yes.
So, Braid winds up getting freed by Katniss 0.5 and Deadpool 0.5, who take them back to their own secret lair, the Night Stalkers. Blade is not impressed, even though, as Deadpool 0.5 points out, they had just saved his ass. Blade is still not impressed, but they eventually convince him that, yes, we should work together to fight the Vampire Madness, and so they go off on a little spree of dealing with more familiars until they find the Vampire's master plan, which apparently involves harvesting human bodies in warehouses for blood. Blade doesn't find this too happy, and he just shuts down the entire operation. Cool. In the meantime, Parker Posey and Drake, a.k.a. Dracula, decide to strike back, and they attack the base and kill everybody who we met so far, who included Patton Oswalt and a blind researcher who was trying to make a virus that killed vampires, and lots of little characters that we got to know for 5 minutes and love and then just died. And so we get the final finale as Blade has to go rescue Deadpool 0.5 with the help of Katniss, and we get shootouts, lots of guns, and a virus that works by no means of biology that I ever known to man.
Like, what the fuck was up with that scene?
I'm not quite sure, but we'll probably get to that in our likes and dislikes.
Quote unquote science.
Quote unquote science.
In italics.
Dracula dies, but he gives a parting gift to Blade by looking like Blade so that the cops who have been chasing Blade all this time think they've caught Blade, and so Blade can ride off into the night to go hunt more vampires alone. I've skipped some plots, but that's basically our movie.
There's a kid in there somewhere.
Yeah, there is a kid.
There's a kid in there. There's a pointless action chase where, well, I shouldn't say pointless because it's obviously that Dracula's chasing where Blade and Dracula go running through the city for 15 minutes in an interminable chase through streets and stairs and all that stuff. And also, oddly, involving a baby. I forgot the little opening scene with Katniss 0.5 where she kills a bunch of vampires in a subway station. There's all sorts of stuff like that. That's what this movie is.
There's like three different babies in this movie.
Two babies and one small child. And alien dog.
Yes, I didn't even mention the vampire dogs.
Yes, this is the one major subplot because really it's very important to the entire movie and plays such an important part of the movie. I swear. Was that sarcastic enough?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. Was the whole thing where they're like trying to become daywalkers and that's why they raised Dracula? I'm not sure.
Was that a thing? I didn't actually get that.
That was a thing that they never ever went anywhere with, but they were also combining vampire DNA with the dogs, and that's why you had alien dogs.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Including a Pomeranian, memorably.
Pomeranian and two Rotties.
Named Pac-Man!
Yeah. Yeah,
but I might be getting, I might be treading on my likes and dislikes there, so I should calm down now.
Oh.
Speaking of our likes and dislikes, because it's only three of us this evening, we get two each. Isn't that exciting?
Oh,
good luck okay. Trying to figure out two likes.
I got them.
Hopefully we will not overlap.
And if you steal any of mine, I will cut you.
Then I'm going first.
You sure about that? Maybe you should go last, Becca.
But then you'll steal mine. There's just not that much to like about this movie.
Are doing likes or dislikes first?
We are going to do our likes first. We'll do two each, and then we'll move to the next person.
Okay, so the first, like, tamer one. The CGI, for the time, was pretty good. The dogs freaked me out, and, like, that meant it was good, right?
Yeah, no, totally. I agree.
Yeah, and I really actually liked, like, the Dracula monster version. Like, the horns were pretty dang... You can't see my hands right now. I don't know why I'm motioning horns, but they were pretty cool.
They were quite large.
The Sumerian demon Dracula version.
Yeah, yeah, you know, there was a little bit more mythology. It was kind of enjoyable.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Duke said that he hated it because there was, like, CGI Blade, but there really was only CGI Blade a couple of times that I can remember in the entire movie.
Yeah, it was like when he was hitting the ground.
Right, and it wasn't that bad. It could be, like, I was watching on standard def, though.
I was watching on HD, and it didn't look awful.
Okay, that's good to know. But the special effects and the makeup were pretty good, for sure.
Yes, yes. Okay, and then my second like was Ryan Reynolds and all of his one-liners.
You know what,
because he had some pretty good ones. I know, I know, but I only wrote two things down, so I'm taking them. And I'm pretty sure all three of us had that one.
Well, I mean, maybe. I'm not going to say that I didn't have that one.
But I can let you have Ryan Reynolds one-liners if you give me the Ryan Reynolds Happy Trail tattoo.
The what?
He had a Happy Trail tattoo.
No, he did not.
Yeah, he did. That was where his familiar tattoo was.
Oh my god, he totally did!
Oh boy. I'm confused.
Happy Trail, Paul, is the space down directly above the pant line.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I get it. Okay, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome, listeners, for that little lesson in male geography.
I know about male geography, I just didn't get the reference.
That's okay.
it just means that I need to stop reading fan fiction. It's okay. It's fine. Right.
Becca!
Wow, I haven't even had any wine tonight. This is great, guys.
That was definitely a highlight, was Ryan Reynolds half naked. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. That was nice. As was another person with a nice chest that was Dracula. I might have a crush on Dominic Purcell, just saying.
There were some hot bods in this movie.
There were some hot bods. I mean, let's talk about how buff Jessica Biel was, for one
thing. That's my like.
Okay, I will stop now. Let's let Paul give his likes.
Okay, the first one is since I am a heterosexual male attracted to women, yes, Jessica Biel is rather buff and rather talented in this movie. She's rather badass with the bow. I mean, her opening scene where she's pretending to be a homeless person, getting surrounded by vampires and just dispatching them with elegant lethality is pretty good. I mean, she's never the damsel in distress, which I appreciated. She's integral in busting the hero out of prison and then helping save Blade a couple of times during his fight in the final scene. So she's competent, she's good. And apparently, I was doing some reading as I was watching this movie. Apparently, she accidentally destroyed an expensive camera lens with her archery.
I saw that. That was pretty impressive.
Because she was launching arrows, and they had the arrow. She had launched it right at the camera, and unfortunately broke through the glass and destroyed the lens. Oops.
Oops. In her defense, they told her to shoot at the camera.
They did. They just, I guess they didn't expect she was practicing so much, and that she would actually break the glass. But you know, her pulling that bow was not CGI. She was actually manipulating a pretty powerful compound bow to good effect.
Oh, for sure. And she looked amazing doing it.
Beautiful.
Now we need a gender-flipped Robin Hood where we have Jennifer Lawrence and Jessica Biel in an archery shoot-off.
I would watch that.
I would watch that for sure.
Can Jennifer Lawrence actually shoot a bow?
Maybe not as convincingly as we see Jessica Biel do in this movie, but, I mean, she had to have some practice for The Hunger Games.
True. Acceptable.
So I'm, like, looking at this, like, list of things that she's been in. This was one of her earliest roles. And I think, because she was not in it in Seventh Heaven the entire time. I think she left at some point. This was, like, her break, her opportunity to show herself as a harder character and person than who she was on Seventh Heaven. And it could have launched a pretty cool, like, action career, And unfortunately, it was Blade Trinity, so...
And yeah, and more recently, another rip-roaring action movie she was in was the remake of Total Recall. That didn't help her career either.
Yeah, and then, so, like, directly after this, she was in Stealth, which was a sadly terrible movie. And Next, which I forgot she was in Next. Becca?
Yeah, we were talking about that off air because that's a Nicolas Cage movie.
And Becca's in love with Nick Cage.
Hey, I mean, I love his movies. I can't help it. Like, National Treasure is just a straight up comfort movie. Like, come on. You gotta accept Nicolas Cage into your life. You gotta.
That's, I guess. But only for that one movie will I allow it.
I mean, two movies.
Okay, if you're talking about Con Air, I will also allow that.
Well, no, there's two National Treasure movies.
No, the second one was awful, Becca. Stop.
No. No. I will not stop. The man is a national treasure, okay?
Oh. Becca, I think we need to stage an intervention here.
Yeah, never. I think we need to cut you off from your twinings. All right, Paul, what is your second like?
My second like. While we're getting to the dislikes of the muddledness of this movie, I did kind of appreciate at least one strand of Parker Posey's cunning plan to get rid of Blade by basically having him kill the human and therefore get the police and cops after him full time. I mean, now, having seen the previous movies, I'm kind of skeptical why Blade fell for this, because he should have been able to tell a human from a vampire without too much difficulty. But if you accept that he was just so pissed off that he wasn't paying attention to his senses and just, you know, I'm on the kill, or he's being reckless because Chris Christopherson gives him crap for being reckless, then okay, so setting up Blade to kill a human that Parker Posey then, I know actually her character's name is Danica Talos, but I just keep calling her Parker Posey. I'm going to just continue doing that because it's Parker Posey. So Parker Posey's evil plan to get him to kill a human, get it on tape, get it to go viral, and so the police, who apparently have not liked Blade anyway, for reasons that we find out that, well, the police are kind of are familiars. Well, actually, the one cop is familiar. The FBI guy.
And the psychologist.
Well, the psychologist is a familiar, but the FBI guy is not. He's actually legitimate. Wow. He's actually not tied to any of the actual factions. He actually just wants to do his job. How refreshing.
Frankly, shocking.
Given the muck of this movie, he's not tied to anybody else. He's just a guy doing his job. But anyway, so, I mean, Getting Blade to kill a human and getting that footage up on everywhere makes the city have to mobilize to actually fight him, and that's clever. So they get him, so you think he capture in jail, and if the Deadpool 0.5 and Katniss 0.5 didn't show up, I mean, Parker Posey and her minions would have captured Blade and taken him back and won. I mean, it's not a bad plan.
It really wasn't. I agree.
I mean, there's lots of other crap going on in this movie, but that core plan of let's set up Blade and then just capture him, I mean, it almost worked.
It did. It's related to one of my major dislikes of this film, though, unfortunately.
Well, before we get to that.
Exactly.
You have two likes.
I have two likes. Yes, I do. I 100% have two likes about this movie. Uh-huh. Getting to them right now.
They're not gonna involve grass, are they? Or landscapes?
The Blood Guild? Doing pretty good.
I still say that my noticing of the coffee cup hanger in Krampus The Reckoning was the best, like, ever.
It is a winner, Becca, I have to admit. No, okay, so I like two things. One is Parker Posey. And the cast in general. This actually had a fantastic cast. Unfortunately, they, like, wasted every single person other than Triple H, and they almost wasted him. Frankly, the fact that there wasn't a Triple H versus Blade fight is still really disappointing to me. But Parker Posey was the standout. And part of that's actually related to what you're like, Paul. The fact that Parker Posey played... I just love saying Parker Posey. Parker Posey was a really good villain. She was one of the better villains that I've seen in movie history, frankly. They didn't actually really do a good job overall in making her a cohesive villain, necessarily. Like, they didn't follow through with some things. But her plot, as Paul mentioned, was good in the first place. And then her scene later on and her whole idea of the reason they stole the kid to torture Deadpool 0.5, that was sheer evil genius. Because, I mean, she goes through this whole thing of she's going to turn him and then starve him and then make him feed on something he loves.
Great plan.
Pure evil. So good. And she's doing it with this fucking mohawk that was, like, gorgeous, that I loved, even if Deadpool 0.5 didn't, because he's stupid. But it was gorgeous. Parker Posey is just, she is fantastic at being evil already, and they gave her just some fantastic moments. In the same scene, when she digs her spiked heel into his bullet wound.
That was pretty hot.
Oh!
Oh my god. Mwah, mwah. Pure, gorgeous angst in that moment. I loved it. It was just, oh.
It's what stilettos are for.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that's what stilettos were for until she used her stiletto like that. And now I'm like, that's the only purpose of stilettos. Clearly. Why haven't we seen this before? So yeah, Parker Posey. My second like is something. I don't actually have a second like. I'm sorry, guys. I really don't. I wanted to have a second like, but I just wrapped it up in my first like because the whole cast is pretty good. But there's really just not very much to actually like about this movie because it's kind of just a humdrum mess overall.
Uh-huh.
And I just couldn't actually figure the buildings. I'm going to go with the building guild. Skyscrapers were well represented. I'm pretty sure this was probably filmed in Vancouver. Not positive. So nice skyline, whatever city it is. Well done.
It's clearly Genericville, Generia, because, you know, we get to see one subway station. It just says waterfront, and it doesn't look like any symbols of any known subway lines in any city I know. What about the final building where we have the confrontation? That's a pretty nice, well-lit building, has interesting topography. We had plenty of glass.
It looked like a face.
Yeah, it did. I don't know if you saw our Discord chat, but it was clearly a transformer.
Yes.
I mean, it was a lovely place to have the final confrontation.
It was. It really was. It looked like a modern art museum of some sort or high-tech office building.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly, but yeah, I have to agree. Overall, the set design in this was actually pretty good. They did good locations.
It's valid.
I can't. I'm sorry. I was like, I totally have more than one like. Oh god, no, I don't.
I think I stole your second one.
You stole my second one, which is Deadpool 0.5. I mean,
Ryan Reynolds is just a beautiful man, and like,
the script was not okay. The dialogue was not awful. The script was awful, but the dialogue itself was not. There were some fantastic one-liners, which granted, also, yeah, it's also part of my dislike, though. I don't know. I'm done. I'm done liking things about this movie.
Just think about Ryan Reynolds saying pika pika like 4 billion times and you'll be okay.
Why would you do that to me, Becca?
You'll get through this.
This is a thing that's happening in this world. I have to embrace that weird fact.
Yeah, we are in the weirdest timeline.
Oh, we are so are.
All right. So this means we're on dislikes now, because I couldn't think of a second like because everybody else stole my second likes. I mean, I made shit up, but that doesn't really count, does it? Maybe it does. It's torture cinema.
I mean, again, I claimed a coffee mug hanger. Anything counts.
That's true. Paul can always think of legitimate things to like.
I'm not sure what that says about me, but it's true. that can find good and bad things. Do I watch these movies too much? I don't know.
I love you, Paul.
The world may never know.
All right, given that fact, Becca, what are your two dislikes?
So my first dislike was the sideburn tattoos, because it makes no goddamn sense. They're tattoos on your frickin' sideburns. Just grow some hair!
But was it only on one side? I couldn't tell.
No, it was on both sides. I thought it was only on one side, but I, like, looked really hard and it was on both sides.
Can we just, like, embrace the fact that all the facial hair in this was terrible? Or lack thereof, in the case of the tattoo sideburns?
Yes.
Yeah. No, it was so bad.
It was, like, Deadpool 0.5. I mean, what the hell was that going on? I mean, I kept calling it low-rent Tony Stark.
Like porn star Tony Stark?
Yeah, exactly. And that he literally used, like, mascara to black his beard.
It was so bad. So, yes, besides the cyber tattoos and the fish art, my second dislike was Jessica Biel fighting with music playing in her ears. That is incredibly stupid. That is so stupid. Like, you can't hear anybody coming up behind you. Like, how dumb do you have to be to fight with an MP3 playlist in your ear? Like, it added nothing to the story at all. Like, oh yeah, she's making a playlist. She likes to fight to music. Who the fuck cares? Do you want to die? Because that's what you're going to do.
My response is, unfortunately, if you paid attention to the technology in this movie, this movie apparently has a fetish for Apple products, and so we see lots of Apple computers.
Good
point. Yeah, I mean, we basically see her ripping stuff from iTunes onto her iPod, so basically it was Apple product placement.
No sense. I hate it.
It makes no sense. You're absolutely right, Becca. Like, I mean, is she trying to get herself and others killed by listening to music rather than actually the tactical situation around her? Yes, that's really bad fighting strategy, and being the best bowwoman since Katniss is not going to save you if you can't hear the bloody vampire coming up behind you.
Exactly.
Before Katniss, Paul. Before Katniss.
The proto-Katniss.
Proto-Katniss. Oh, poor Jessica Biel. I mean, really, do you think she's kind of mad that she didn't get the credit for being the proto-Katniss? Because I think I would be.
Jessica Lawrence has unfortunately had a much better, more stable career than...
I'm sorry, did you just call her Jessica Lawrence?
Jessica Lawrence. They're the same person. Let's just admit it. Don't worry, Paul, really, because, like, you can genuinely just replace them with another.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence. Yes, Jennifer Lawrence has had the career that Jessica Biel probably would want.
Yes.
Presumably. But yeah, those are my two dislikes, because you shouldn't fight with earbuds in.
No, you really shouldn't.
Important safety tip. It's not a good move.
Now that that's off my chest, how about you, Paul?
All right, two dislikes. I only get two?
Yes, you only get two.
Let's start with two and see where it goes from there.
Okay, dislike number one. I'll come at this from an oblique angle. I like to do the Socratic method here. Becca, Jen, what is the name of this movie?
Blade Trinity.
Who is ostensibly the main character of this movie?
Blade.
Thank you. Okay, so for a movie that's named Blade Trinity and has a titular star named Blade, named Wesley Snipes, he has an awfully weirdly small screen footprint compared to other characters in this movie.
100% true.
It's like, granted, some of those characters are interesting with interesting backstories and agendas, but it's just like, this movie's like a 10-pound bag of characters, and Wesley Snipes gets lost in among all what these characters are all doing. It's like, he's overshadowed in his own movie. It's...
Yeah.
Fun fact, Wesley Snipes and Kris Kristofferson were actually upset with David Goyer because of the fact that they felt that they had put too many new characters into Blade Trinity.
I mean, they did.
They may have been right, and they kill off Kris Kristofferson in the most pointless death since probably a previous death in the movie, but whatever.
I'm a blow up.
He did not get a good death. No.
No. No. I mean, and I remember being really, really angry about that when I first saw this film, because obviously Whistler was one of the best parts, although I really don't remember the second movie, but he was at least one of the best parts of the first film, and their interactions were pretty good. So killing him off to make way for Baby Whistler is just kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, the whole passing the torch without really passing the torch, yeah.
Passing the torch in a flashback.
Right. Considering the fact that you are given the impression in the previous two films that his entire family is dead, and then suddenly she's not dead.
He has a bastard love child.
Yeah, born out of wedlock, she says proudly and weirdly, because people do that.
It was very strange.
Very, very strange.
I mean, yes, we get Kat in the 0.5, but still.
And she's hot, but she's still. Hot,
but still, like, come on. This could have been handled better.
Yeah. And we also get Deadpool 0.5, which, granted.
I would bang both of them.
Well, yes, 100%.
And he has a backstory. He became Parker Posey's vampire cabana boy and then got cured. Yay.
Everybody likes cabana boys.
Not my thing, but that's okay.
No, I am 100% with you, Paul, and the fact that two of the main actors of this franchise also agree with you, I think says something about this film.
Oh, good. But my second is, like, kind of wraps in with that and looks at it from a different angle. Okay, so, what is this movie about? Is it about Blade getting set up by Parker Posey and expose of vigilantism versus law enforcement? Or is it a movie about the return of, from a long sleep for reasons we couldn't understand, Dracula? Or is this a movie about blood farming? Or is this a movie about the Night Stalkers? What the heck is this movie about? We got 6,000 different plots running in this movie all at the same time. Things get introduced and then thrown away. I mean,
it's like the unholy trinity of Batman, The Mummy, and Castlevania.
It is.
Yes. It's like this movie never actually ever wants to settle for too long in any one plot, and it just gets discarded. Okay, so Blade is now a fugitive and running from the law. Fine. Okay, oops. Wait, oh, here are the Night Stalkers, and they have their own entire plot and agenda. But, oh, wait, here we have Dracula, and he has his own ideas. Once he's resurrected, I mean, Parker Posey wants to do stuff, but Dracula's idea is like, oh, I want to fight Blade because that would be a worthy adversary and that would be fun. I guess Dracula's really, really, really bored. I mean, he really got into that sword fight with Blade. Apparently sleeping for how many hundreds of years means you really want to fight with the best of the best. Although he didn't actually look that great. He looked too much reliant on power with an actual skill and agility, but I'm criticizing sword fights. I probably should leave that to Mike Underwood. He'd be better at it.
No, I think Mike Underwood would 100% agree with you that that was a shit terrible sword fight. It was so slow.
Yeah.
Especially considering the fact that previously in the film, he dodged bullets.
Yes, yeah, we get bullet time. So that didn't work for me. Okay, so we have this whole blood farming thing that gets thing. And they said, oh, yes, they're going to win. There's millions of these cities throughout the world. And oh, yes, there's one password to shut down the blood farm. Yeah, that makes sense. And so he kills that blood farm. So now is he going to go to every city in the world and shut them all down too?
Apparently not, because he didn't get any more movies after this.
What are the ethics of this? But as soon as it's introduced, it's thrown away. And what was the whole point of Christoph and destroying all those files anyway? What was the point of him destroying all those computers? I don't quite understand.
Did he know about the Night Stalkers? Like, was he trying to protect them?
No, he definitely knew about the Night Stalkers, because the Night Stalkers were giving him that new inhaler for Blade. He was working with the Night Stalkers all along.
Oh, yeah, those were the friends of his. That's right.
Those are the friends of his. So why the heck would you just not send the data to the Night Stalkers instead of, you know, blowing up years of research and planning that you and Blade have done together to do what? To kill a couple of cops? What?
Right. And the ethics of that, too, is a little bit questionable.
Well, yeah, when I saw Christopherson just like calmly shotgunning cops. It's like, what the hell?
In his defense, I think they were FBI agents.
That makes it better.
That doesn't make it any better. It's like,
no, it doesn't.
I mean, Chris Christopherson had just chewed out Blade quite rightly for killing a human and getting sloppy. So when they break in, your power move is to blow up all your research and start shotgunning people.
You gotta say, it is a power move. It's a shitty power move.
It's a shitty power move, and it doesn't work with the character of we've established through two movies to this point. It's like,
but this is Blade Trinity.
But this is Blade Trinity, and a movie that has no idea what it wants to do or be. And if it had just settled on maybe a couple of these, okay, cut out the whole blood farming crap, and you could even get rid of Dracula and just have it Blade versus Parker Posey's vampires who are trying to make a virus. That would be a tighter, more focused movie and might be more entertaining. Because, I mean, the Blade versus Dracula scenes did not do it for me. Okay, so we get Blade chasing Dracula at one point, and Dracula at one point steals a baby because reasons. And then they have that crappy sword fight that just does not work. It's like, why does Dracula even need to be in this movie? Because he's the big bad vampire and we want to send off...
They need him to do the virus to make the thing.
The good guys need Dracula to make the virus work, and the bad guys need Dracula to make themselves Daywalkers. And really, Dracula is just one giant plot device that makes no sense.
Yeah, he's a plot device. I mean, he wants to be a character, and you could have chopped out half the stuff and made him the character and the focus, but no, you just get pieces of all these plots and ideas floating around, and nothing ever gels together. Before you just swept along to the next sequence, and this movie is a bag of bones, and it just never comes together. And that really, really annoys me. There's some small things I like, but then suddenly, oh no, we're going to go to something else. We're going to go to a blood farm because that makes perfect sense.
Totally,
Paul, you stole my entire dislike.
I'm sorry.
It's just not a good day for you, Jen.
It's not. It's just not fair.
Oh no.
No, you really did steal my entire dislike, because it is the biggest problem with this film, right? Like, that's why I say the dialogue was good, but the script was awful. And one of the things that's a major problem is the whole Dracula plotline, like the virus and the becoming Daywalkers. That's all they ever try to do in the Blade movies, is what it seems like, right? Like, that's basically vampires want to walk in the daytime, and the Night Stalker / Whistler Blade people want to kill all the vampires and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, I'm kind of bored of this plot device. And really, as you say, Paul, they could have just gone with Parker Posey and the blood farms as the thing, right? That would have been fine, because then you actually have a really interesting thing that is being said, because they did have a point when the chief is talking about the blood farm. He's mentioning nobody cares about homeless people. That's an interesting plot device, right? The fact that nobody's looking at the fact that all these people are disappearing. That could have been really interesting. He could have been working with the FBI after getting framed by the FBI, because of course, Parker Posey doesn't want him screwing up her plot to kidnap random homeless people and turn them into her giant network of blood farms. That's interesting. All of that could have worked really well and would have been a good criticism of society as a whole, because he's right. Society, as we know it, tends to completely ignore homeless people. I would have liked that movie. That would have been a good movie. But instead, they're like, no, we're going to throw in Dracula because why not? We've just always wanted to have Dracula in the movie.
And we're going to call him Drake.
Because why the fuck not?
And we're going to make him Sumerian.
And we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And oh, by the way, we're also doing this. Why? Because we cannot settle on one fucking thing because we don't know how to write a script. Like, so frustrating.
Yeah, it's like they had four different writers and just tore up all their scripts and then threw them in a bag and then just recorded in the way it came out.
Right? You stole my dislike, Paul, so I'm just going, I'm continuing with it because it's such a huge problem with this film. Huge, huge problem. And I'm still angry about it a day later. And I love, like I said, I love the actors that are in this. I fucking have a huge crush on Dominic Purcell, so thank you very much for putting in a movie and showing me his chest a whole bunch. Appreciate it. But why? Why have Dracula in this movie? He probably would have been better as, like, I don't know, Parker Posey's sidekick or something. That would have been cool. But no. And Parker Posey was scarier than Dracula.
Yes?
Yeah.
What? Ugh.
Just to go back to, okay, so you're calling him Dracula, but he's really Sumerian, but you don't actually even, the only reference we have to him actually being Dracula, he talks about Stoker's Fable. If not for that line, there's nothing to say that this guy is Dracula. There's no connection to his Transylvanian existence or anything like that. I mean, he's a Sumerian demon creature thing.
Yeah, but they barely even explain that aspect of it, so you just have to assume that's what's going on here. The same thing happened when you and I, Paul, were discussing The Voice, whether or not the familiar was using The Voice, because there's such shoddy world building going on in this series that who fucking knows? You just have to assume things, basically, because you've played Vampire the Masquerade before.
Yeah, I've run enough Vampire the Masquerade to fill in some of the holes that they have in this movie.
And there are so many holes.
All the holes.
I mean, basically, they're trying to engage in diabolery to increase their vampire level. At least Parker Posey and his group are. I know that was really geeky, and maybe besides Mike, six listeners will get that reference, but that's okay.
Exactly. I get it.
I didn't. I'm a youngin'.
You're a young and you have to play more White Wolf, Miss Becca.
Yeah, but White Wolf is bad these days because it's full with toxic people. Sadly.
And anyway, I'm pretty convinced that Parker Posey is a red cap. So, you know, she might be playing a vampire in this, but she's totally a red cap.
Now you're crossing entire game systems.
I'm crossing the streams.
You're crossing the streams.
Woo! I remember another one of your dislikes from the Discord channel, though, Jen.
What was that?
Which was their treatment of being blind.
Oh.
That's exactly what I was about to get to. Thank you, Becca, for putting me back on track. Ha ha! Very clever. So that is my second dislike. This problem has a major problem. Sorry, this problem has a major problem.
This movie has a major problem.
Woo! I am so drunk on cheap tea! This movie has a major problem with just being really bad at representing basically anything. One of the big things is the blind character, which is played by Natasha Lyonne, who I love normally. She's completely, utterly wasted in this film, by the way. She is supposed to be a blind scientist. Unfortunately, they never actually display her using any assistive devices. There's a cane once, very briefly. And that's it. So it was more like, this is shorthand for blind people. They put sunglasses on her in the dark so that you couldn't tell the fact that Natasha Lyonne apparently could not keep her eyes still long enough to play a blind person, which is a problem as well, because it's clearly obvious that she's still using her eyes, which would be fine if they had said something like she has low vision, in which case the sunglasses don't make any sense in the first place, but you know, you could have played with it in other ways, but they didn't. They just decided to make a blind character because, ooh, that's edgy. Edgy blind scientist. Isn't that cool? No, not when you, A, don't hire a blind actor for the role, and B, don't provide any explanation for how she's able to use computers, how she's able to aim a gun. They have Patton Oswalt as this tech that can make a UV freaking bow thingy, and yet he cannot invent a security system that sees movement and alerts the blind person who is watching, quote unquote, watching the security cameras while everybody else is goofing off. Oh my god, my rage! My rage!
Yeah, I was really frustrated. Wait a minute, he's got all these cool gadgets. He's the cue for these guys, and he can't actually protect your base properly? Oh my.
How are you still alive?
Later on, though, this is the extra, like, super pissy part. The fact that as Heyerdahl, the actor's name is Heyerdahl, and I think his name was Calder in the film. Fantastic actor. He's the guy who, like, provides them with the arrow tip with the virus in it at the end. When he approaches, they have a fucking automatic gun that trains on him while Jessica Biel is shooting her bow. But that wasn't on when the blind person was doing security with a security system that doesn't even have any noise alarms. What the fuck?
Inconsistent world building. Inconsistent technology.
Very, very inconsistent. And we haven't even got into the bad science. I mean, come on. Ugh.
Yes, the science in this movie just makes absolutely no sense.
None whatsoever. You really just can write it off as there's not actually science in this movie. They just pretend there is.
It's magic.
Oh, it's magic.
or it's Mage the Ascension and we have the technocracy, so we have science that works as magic.
Crossing the streams.
Well, we'll cross the streams when they had the technocracy kill a vampire. It's across two lines, so...
It's really White Wolf's fault.
It's White Wolf's fault, so... They can cross the streams, I can.
And it's Blade's fault for paying attention to White Wolf, apparently. Because, yeah, no, it was... The blind character was a truly offensive addition to this film because they didn't actually portray a blind person in any way remotely resembling an actual blind person. And they didn't, they just kind of ignored the fact. It was really just window dressing. And that's a problem. And it pissed me off. And that's not to mention the other offensive things about this movie, which is, you know, early 2000s transphobic jokes, homophobic jokes, and misogynist jokes. All of those things were in here, all coming from Deadpool 0.5. So fuck that noise.
Yeah.
And I think I'm done ranting now because...
It was a good rant.
Was it a good rant? I feel like I got my rage out.
Yeah, it was good. It was cathartic.
It was cathartic. I didn't realize I had that much rage, to be quite honest. So thank you, both of you, for letting me do that.
Glad to be of service.
Thank you, listeners, for listening to my rant or turning this off. Could have gone either way.
Well, now we get to grade this movie and have final thoughts.
Yes, indeed. It's that time of the night. So, Becca.
This is the downside of going first. I'm going to give it... F pluses are a thing, right?
Absolutely.
F plus, because Ryan Reynolds and, you know,
Parker Posey.
Parker Posey. You know, those people, they add half a grade point to this, so...
That's more like a third of a grade, though, I think, right?
Well, yeah, but like...
Because you have minus, regular, and plus, so that's three-thirds. A third of a grade.
The movie gets an F+, plus. It was shit, okay? Like, no.
I approve this message. Paul, final thoughts and grade.
The science of this movie was pants. It's five different plots trying to come together to form a family, and it doesn't. It wastes a hell of a lot of talent. Wesley Snipes needs to be checked out of his own movie. But we do get Jessica Biel shooting things with arrows. We get poor Patton Oswalt being cute, but he gets killed off screen, which is terrible. We do get Deadpool 0.5, although he is way too transphobic and homophobic in this iteration from my taste. There's some ideas here that just don't ever come together, which really frustrates the crap out of me. It's not the worst thing we've ever seen on torture cinema, though. That's the hell of this. I'm going to be relatively generous to this thing then, and I'm going to give it a D.
That's even less generous than I was going to be, given that the last movie I watched was truly offensive. So if anybody wants to hear my thoughts on Leprechaun in the Hood, you are welcome to go listen to that episode.
I was not on that episode.
I was not on that episode either.
No, but you were both supposed to listen to it.
Oops.
I'm a grad student. I don't have time.
I'm kidding. I forgive you both. But listeners, if you haven't listened to it, I hate you. You picked this. You picked them. And if you didn't listen to them, okay.
One day, they'll pick a Nicolas Cage movie, and you will all come to my side.
Oh, dear God.
Becca, you're truly evil. So, yes, a D is actually less generous than I am going to be this evening, because it had elements of a good movie. Unfortunately, it was not cohesive enough to actually make a good movie. I am not going to forgive it its offensiveness. However, I will concede that it was made in the early 2000s when all of us were apparently just the worst people ever.
I was 4.
Oh, shush.
I feel old, listeners. I feel old.
I was between 4 and 14 in the early 2000s.
Oh, dear God.
Becca, my children were born in 2000 and 2002. I just want to bring that up as we discuss how young you were when this movie came out.
Listeners, I am currently 22.
Oh, sweet summer child. Sweet summer child.
But otherwise, the rest of us who were of an age to be terrible were all truly terrible people. And we, at the time, collectively, were just trash. We were all trash. And we watched movies like Blade Trinity, and we laughed at the trash jokes. Which says something about our culture, I think. So I'm not going to forgive it, but I will concede that we were all trash at the time. So I can't really accuse it of being trash when I, too, was trash. Because of that, but because they killed off Kris Kristofferson in favor of Baby Whistler / Katniss 0.5 and Deadpool 0.5, which granted did lead to Deadpool, which I do appreciate, I'm just going to give it a C because it's bad, but it didn't kill me.
I feel like I would have given it a higher grade if I understood more of what was happening because, you know, I didn't watch Blade 1 or 2.
Yeah, what the hell? Becca, get you to a movie screen.
I'm a sweet summer child.
You really are. It's adorable and precious, and we love you for it. You at least have to watch the first one, and it is on Netflix, so...
Well, yeah, the first two are on Netflix, so, like, I really have no excuse.
You don't need to watch the second one. Nobody cares. But watch the first one.
We average out to just above a D. We come out to 1.1, since 1.0 is a D. We just come just above a D, not quite a D+.
Just a smidgen above it. So, and I think that's fair.
I will accept that.
That feels right to me.
It feels right about this movie. I mean, Duke isn't here to add his score, which probably would have been like, it's an A! Because he has terrible taste in films. But he's not here. So I think a D is quite acceptable for Blade Trinity.
Thank you, listeners, I think. First Gala Walkers, and now this. There are no more bad Wesley Snipes undead movies that they could make us suffer through, right?
Oh, shit. I don't know. I hope not.
I would just like to add that any listeners who are supporters of Nick Cage and are not yet supporters of our Patreon, you should really go over there, because then we'd actually win a poll, and then we could watch Nick Cage movies.
Oh, God.
Nobody listened to Becca. However, you should still become Patreon supporters because of the fact that from now until the end of our Patreon, we will be hosting a live watch on our Discord channel. So if you become a $3 plus patron of the Skiffy and Fanti Show, you can join us as we watch these terrible movies that you and only you, our patrons, get to select for us each and every month.
And watch us react in real time.
I promise we're funny.
Well, I'm funny anyway. I'm just kidding.
I'm just mostly sarcastic and dead inside.
We are all funny, and that is the reason that we are all on the Skiffy and Fanty show, because it is a tragic hilarity. And with that, everybody say goodbye.
Stay frosty.
Bye.
Awkward ending. And see.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to support us, you can find us at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do so at our email at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, and on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro and outro music comes from Dimension by Creo. You can find out more about them at freemusicarchive.org. ¶¶